We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
An eventful weekend in which no lead was safe. Ones and two seeds given some scares. We have multiple down-to-the-wire contests, though the final product looks admittedly a little bit chalky, only makes the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games to come more compelling this weekend. And now we descend upon Albany and Portland. Welcome to another edition of the Gower Hour, presented by the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. Megan Gower, Rob Joyce with you as always. Megan, first of all, how's your bracket? Mine's okay.
Mine's okay, too. It's not perfect, but, you know, the whole Final Four, and I think my whole Elite Eight are still intact, so I'll take that.
My bracket is perfect, just some of the teams didn't listen. first round, disappointing effort by me, a couple of teams in the second round. Here's the deal for today. We'll recap not all 48 first and second round games, but we'll hit on what already happened in all of the regions. We'll then preview what's to come this weekend in Albany and Portland. Might get a little discombobulated. There's a lot to get to. We had our first major coaching change yesterday, Kenny Brooks leaving Virginia Tech to go to Kentucky. We'll talk about that. So we'll get pulled a lot of different directions, but we'll try to get to it all. Where do you want to begin? Pick your region, pick your game. You know, I'm game wherever you want to start.
Maybe we start with the biggest upset, also because it's first on the sheet of paper I'm looking at, and it's early. But the biggest upset, I feel like, was in Portland 3 with Ohio State not advancing to the Sweet 16.
Yeah, and it looked like it might be a blowout. They were up 16 in the first half, and Duke, admittedly, you know, not a team that I thought could overcome a 16-point deficit against a team that, like Ohio State, you know, Duke's defense is good, but when you're down 16, do you have the offense to overcome that? And then the defense to, you know, stop Ohio State enough to allow the comeback. Clearly, that was the case because Duke is off to the Sweet 16. Ohio State, the highest seed to lose in the opening weekend. We'll start with the Duke side. Reagan Richardson, great. She was phenomenal. Kara Lawson has this program on the up and up. And, you know, you knew that coming into the year. I didn't think they had the offense, and they did.
Yeah, agreed. I thought, especially once they were down 16, it almost fell over. Like, I didn't turn it off, but it was also like, but they just haven't had the offense all season, so are they going to have it in this moment to come back against a team like Ohio State that can score the basketball pretty well, even against a team of Duke's defensive caliber? But like you said, Reagan Richardson goes off career high 28 points, and Duke's able to not only make the comeback, but then sustain it to get the win.
Buckeyes, yikes. Cody McMahon was great. She was unstoppable, but mm-hmm. She didn't get any help. Now, last week, I probably should have made a bigger deal. I just kind of casually threw out, hey, Ohio State, like historically, probably won't make the Final Four. But I just kind of tossed it aside and then didn't really expand upon it. Well, like on the year, out-rebounded by over two rebounds per game. The last 20-some-odd years, that's never happened. Team has been out-rebounded, period, and made the Final Four. The only exceptions, Arizona a couple of years ago, it was pretty much 50, like even. they were like a minus half of a rebound margin. And then Oregon State, when they made the run back in 2016. So no one's ever been out rebounded by two a game and made the Final Four. Well, Ohio State was out rebounded by 18 against Duke on Saturday. So just, you know, the struggles came out on the, you know, worst possible stage. And on top of that, you shoot one of 11 from three. Where do they go from here? Cody McManus back, but they lose, I think, all four starters. They have a J.C. Sheldon replacement, hopefully coming in. Five-star recruit, Jelani Cambridge, is a point guard. She's a top three recruit, depending on your recruiting service of choice. They'll go portaling, I'm sure, but certainly there are holes to fill now for a team that, you know, had high expectations coming into the year. And for a couple of months, looked like they'd meet them. And ultimately, here we are, second weekend, and the Buckeyes aren't there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Cody McMahon, obviously a great place or a great piece to be building around. But like you said, they're going to have to rebuild a lot of this roster. I mean, obviously, the portal is a great place to start. I think we've seen, especially the last few years, these teams that you think they don't really have anything coming back. And then the portal can change that pretty quickly. So I wouldn't be shocked to see them pretty active in there. I know we've already seen a lot of names head in there, despite the fact that we're still in the midst of the season for a lot of these teams. So I'm sure that McGuff will be heading in that direction shortly.
Yes. We don't need to talk about who's in the portal, partly because I haven't looked in the last, I don't know, week. Because silly me, I was trying to pay attention to the games of the players that are still playing. And then partly because, again, we have time. We have 2 weeks from now. We'll talk about everyone in the portal and where they could go and who could possibly get them. But yeah, Ohio State, you think would go portaling. The other major, I don't want to say major, but Portland 3, Baylor, Virginia Tech. First of all, I was way off on this regional. I thought it would be chaotic end of the day.
Pretty sure.
I was wrong. I said it last week. Just go with your gut. And I was like, yeah, no Elizabeth Kitley. It's fine. They'll beat Marshall. And then I talked to myself. I'm like, yeah, Marshall scores a lot of points. And you know what? We haven't had a 4-13 in a while. And I talked myself into a 13 over a 4. And boy, that was wrong. Yeah, that was very, very wrong. He had a 4-5. Very, very entertaining game. Baylor beats Virginia Tech. We'll talk about the Baylor side, but it's almost not a footnote because Baylor will play this weekend and we'll talk about it. But like Virginia Tech lost. Not the story coming out of Blacksburg now. It's because where does that program go next? Kenny Brooks is off to Kentucky. Elizabeth Kitley is gone. Georgia Amore, she technically has another year. She's not going to come back. And now you'll wonder how many of these players, you know, Clara Strack, where did she come from? She was great this weekend. Matilda Eck, she was great this weekend. Are they going to stick around? Are they going to go? Like, there's so many questions now coming out of Blacksburg.
Yeah, and I think just goes to show how hard it is to be like these teams to sustain the success when they get to the top, because things like this happen, right? Kenny Brooks now headed to Kentucky, to the SEC. Obviously, great for him. I'm sure it's a huge pay raise, so good for him. But yeah, this is now going to be a team that one needs a new coach. I think the latest I've seen on Twitter is that it seems like the Rice coach is probably the front runner for that spot, but then they've got to rebuild a roster too when you're losing a Kitley, who took this program to a place that it had never been before. Georgia Amore was a huge part of that too, and now, like you said, I would assume she's not coming back. So it's just going to be a rebuild season, it feels like, for them.
Yeah, and they had, you would think, like an obvious replacement. Sean Poppy was an assistant under Kenny Brooks for a while. However, like a couple of hours before, maybe the day before, Brooks took the Kentucky job. Well, Poppy, who was the Chattanooga coach, now at Clemson. So their backup option, or what many assumed would be their first obvious go-to option, he was no longer available. He is no longer available. You hit the nail on the head. Like, getting to the top is one thing. Staying there is a whole other animal. Like, go back to the Final Four 5 years ago. You know, let's go back to the 2019 Women's Basketball Final Four. It was... Standby.
Oregon. Baylor.
Last place in the Big 12, in the Pac-12 this year. Yeah. Oregon lost 13 straight games. Baylor won it all. Okay, but they took a slide when Kim Mulkey came down. Nikki Collum has them back in the up and up. They're on the Sweet 16. UConn, Duke, and then Notre, who Muffet McGraw left. Did they miss a tournament? They would have missed in 2020.
Yeah, I think they would have missed in 2020, but there wasn't a tournament for them to miss. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe a bad example of 2019 in particular, but you know, Oregon, Mississippi State made the national championship game in 2017, 2018. Vic Schaefer leaves. Now they're, you know, like they missed out this year. They were a bubble team last year. That's probably what Mississippi State is. Virginia Tech wouldn't shock me if either they miss the tournament next year or they're on the bubble or they're just not back to these heights, because it just, it's so hard to stay there, which is why if you're a UConn fan, if you're a Stanford fan, if you're a South Carolina fan, if you're a Tennessee fan waiting to go back to what was, you know, what we were in Knoxville, there's no guarantees, especially now in, you know, Kenny Brooks was born in Virginia. He was raised in Virginia. He played at James Madison, which is right up the road from Blacksburg. He coached at VMI. He coached at JMU. He coached at Virginia Tech. Like, he's never left the state of Virginia. I don't blame him. Like, the money comes. You're losing the best player that Virginia Tech's ever had. Probably maybe the two best players they've ever had. Now's the right time. Does it suck for the Hokies? Yeah, but one of the themes of today is, you know, college sports isn't fair. And sadly for Virginia Tech, they were on one of the sides of it not being fair. From the Baylor side, you and I have been down on Baylor pretty much since we started up the pot in January. Here, they admittedly, they get a favorable draw. They take care of business against Vanderbilt in the 5 versus 12 game. That game was never really in doubt. And then, obviously, taking on Virginia Tech at home is one thing. Taking on Virginia Tech without Elizabeth Kitley is another. But Jada Walker, a career game. Sarah Andrews hit some big shots. They didn't even get a whole lot from their bigs, which surprised me a little, but here they are, Sweet 16. And you know, we'll talk about, we'll preview all the Sweet 16 games later, but if you're going to get a one seed USC, they're playing really, really well, but might be the one seed you want.
Yeah, I think if you had to play one, I kind of agree, the one seed you want. They're so dependent on Juju a lot of the time, so if you can find a way to slow her down, maybe you have a chance. I still feel like I'm not, like, super high on this Baylor team, and like, I know we're gonna get to the matchup, so I won't go into it, but like, yeah, you beat Virginia Tech, but they didn't have Kitley, and you snuck by 3 points. Great game from Jada Walker. I don't want to discredit that, like, she was fantastic, but still, it doesn't, like, a 3-point win over a team that didn't have their best player doesn't, like, do a lot for me.
I get that. I'm trying to not be the wet blanket and say that. Because, hey, at the end of the day, Sweet 16 is a Sweet 16.
Right, exactly. We're already, no matter how you get there, it's a Sweet 16.
Right, exactly. Other Portland 3, USC, business-like. I mean, they were just better than Kansas. Like, you knew that going in. They showed it. They didn't really play around with their food at all. Juju and then Mackenzie Forbes, you know, if they combined for 48 points and those two combined for 10 threes, like, they weren't even overly efficient. But if they just get that kind of productivity, mm-hmm. You know, that's what makes them hard to beat.
Right.
Is that it's, you know, Juju obviously is going to do what she does, but Mackenzie Forbes has just continued to be so, so, so solid.
Yeah. And I think that's the key for them, right? Like they're not going to get to a Final Four on just Juju. You're going to need other people to contribute. But if they keep getting that, like, that makes them a much better team.
And the rebounding has been much better of late. There was even against Kansas, pretty physical team, but like, they out rebounded the heck out of UCLA and Stanford in the Pac-12 tournament. Something that hadn't really happened until the last couple of weeks, especially against those two teams in particular, peaking at the right time, to say the least, for the Trojans. And then UConn, Syracuse, you were in the building at Gamble. Paige Beckers, the biggest knock on her from a non, there's people who have, you hate Caitlin Clark, you hate Paige Beckers, you hate Angel Reese, whatever, ignoring that. One of the biggest knocks on Beckers, probably from Gino's point of view, is stop being passive, mm-hmm. Take over the game. I think she's learned that.
Yeah, I think we've seen that, not just in these first two games, but also in the Big East tournament when Aaliyah Edwards went down. It felt like she kind of had that attitude, and now it's continued into this tournament. And I think it's been really good for UConn. They needed it against Syracuse. They needed her to take over down the stretch. And she was, she's just like, I don't think you can say enough about how good she was in these first two games. She's averaging like 30, 10, and like 6. It's just like insane.
And not even that, it's the defense too.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Paige Blockers showed up, you know, middle of the year. It's kind of calmed down because she's a guard, but you know, she picks up big time steals when she needs to. She'll play defense when she needs to. Gino called her the best player in the country. I don't feel like having 10,000 Iowa fans in my mentions. Like, yeah. Paige Beckers is, you think, the best player in the country? Cool. Caitlin Clark is Caitlin Clark. Like, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole, a 50-foot pole. But Paige Beckers reminding people why she has a former National Player of the Year. And then how about Ashlyn Shade? I mean, Huskies probably don't, you know, for all of Becker's greatness on Tuesday, they probably don't win without Ashlyn Shade.
Yeah, as much as, like, Paige has been the story for this team, it's like Shade has been so good in both games. And I think it was kind of like the question mark for this team going in, right? Like, you know, you had Paige Beckers, you knew you had Aaliyah Edwards. Like, what are you going to get from your freshman? And I think Ashlyn Shade has kind of answered that question for them in the first two games. And she's been fantastic. She knocked down big threes. She had a big steal against that Syracuse, or at the end of that Syracuse game. So she's really hasn't looked rattled by the moment at all.
KK Arnold, arguably the biggest shot of the game with a big three. Nika Mule can't foul out going forward without scoring. And then, because, I mean, Ice Brady, for, moment looked way too big for Ice Brady. And this is a thin UConn team. Like, they can't afford the five on the five on the floor have to be the five on the floor. There's no alternative option. So, yeah, Mule can't foul out. Yeah, but, again, 30 years in a row, UConn is playing in the Sweet 16, which is wild. Next closest is South Carolina with 10. Of all the crazy, wild streaks that have ended for UConn, you know, the win streak 5-6 years ago now, the Final Four streak ended last year. This is one that kind of goes underappreciated because it's like, all right, yeah, you won two games in the tournament. Iowa lost in the second round 2 years ago. Last year, 2-1 seeds lost in the second round. Ohio State lost in the second round this year, which is probably a good thing for the Huskies. No rematch of last year. Like, 30 straight years being here will never be seen again whenever the streak comes to an end.
Yeah, I was like, they have never missed a Final Four in my lifetime. Like, that's, or not a Final Four, sorry, Sweet 16 in my lifetime. Like, that's crazy to think about when you talk about, like, sustained success. And then Gina talked a little bit about it after the game on, was that Monday? Yeah, Monday. And kind of just said that, like, part of that is, like, the consistency in the coaching staff, right? Like, they've had the luxury of, like, Gino has been there for a really long time and has been able to kind of, his, like, the consistency of the coaching staff and the program's culture is enough to get you to the Sweet 16. And they said, beyond that, you need the players that can carry you the rest of the way. And he's referring to Paige Beckers for the season, but obviously the Huskies have had their fair share of players that have fit that role.
Yes. And on the other side, shout out Daisha Fair. She finishes as the third all-time leading scorer in women's basketball history. I said this, I think it was the pod that you missed with Calvin. Like, a lot of big-time, low, mid-major players will make the jump up to the power levels. And that 20 points a game at, you know, pick your, in this case, Buffalo, because that's where she came from, becomes 10 points, 11 points, 12 points, maybe at the power level. Well, Fair's the exception here. She proved that she can get buckets, doesn't matter the level. She's spectacular.
Yeah, exactly. She was great in that first round game for them. She scored, I think, the last, like, 13 points of the game, went on an 11-0 run just by herself to take them from down, I think, 5 to Arizona to up 6. Like, it's just, like, she's perfect in clutch moments, too.
And even, she, you know, she didn't shoot the ball well for the first 2.5 quarters against UConn on Monday. Mm-hmm. The ball in her hands in the fourth quarter, it's scary if you were rooting for UConn. Having the ball in her hand is like, oh, like, I don't care if she's 0 for 25 in this game. If she needs to make a 3, I trust
she's
her to
gonna
make a
3.
Anything else from Portland 3? Kansas-Michigan game was fun. Went to overtime. Michigan kind of gacked away the last few minutes there. You mentioned Arizona kind of gacked away the few minutes against, I don't know if they gacked away as much as Fair, just decided, right, I'm going to take over. Otherwise, any other takeaways from Portland 3?
I don't think so. I think that sums it up.
Where do you want to go next?
Let's stay in Portland. Let's go over to
Portland 4. Okay, so we'll talk about a 2 seed that almost got eliminated. Stanford survives against Iowa State. Kiki Irfan was spectacular. 40 points in overtime. Cameron Brink.
Another play
didn't
that
have a
can't
great game.
Foul out.
Had a viral moment. She only had 8 points. She fouled out with 2.5 left in regulation, but you know, someone we've talked about a lot, Hannah Jump, she did enough. 14 points, made a couple of threes. Irfan stepped in for Brink, and that's exactly what they need. And here we are, Stanford narrowly avoids a repeat of last year.
Yeah, very close to coming down. I feel like we have to talk about Iowa State some too, because Emily Ryan was fantastic in that game. She just absolutely went off. And I know we haven't talked a lot about first round games, but Audie Crooks in the first round game too, 40 points, the most
18
ever.
18 of 20.
Yeah, 90% shooting. I looked it up last night, the most ever by a freshman in the NCAA tournament as well, 40 points. So just incredible performance.
It was not good against Stanford, 3 of 21. We kind of said that last week of, I'm not going to expect a freshman in Audie Crooks to go up against Irfan and Brink and thrive. Still, breakout candidate that everyone's going to fawn over come September, October, when we start to talk 24-25. Emily Ryan said she's coming back. She's using her COVID year, right? So she's back. Audie Crooks is back. Addie Brown, another stud freshman, is back. She had, I think, 16 against Stanford. You're looking at a preseason top 10 team, probably. Yes. Unlike some of these teams that have had huge jumps after an NCAA tournament moment, I think they could live up to it. I don't know, maybe top 10 might be a bit, you know, again, it's a bit ambitious right now. We don't know what the portal looks like. We don't know, you know, who's leaving, who's staying in terms of some of these seniors with their extra COVID years. I think they could live up to it, though, because the future is certainly bright in a gettable Big 12.
Yeah, agreed.
Other Portland for NC State, Tennessee. Big second quarter from the Wolfpack, up 20. Nearly blew it. Ultimately, saved the day. You and I both had Tennessee, not only in the Sweet 16, but in the Elite Eight. So what were your takeaways from the NC State side? You know, I was impressed that that second quarter, they got hot. What I need, maybe I was a little foolish in picking Tennessee, because NC State's really, really good at home. Where the Wolfpack struggle and where I'm interested in, again, we won't quite look ahead yet, but where I'm interested against Stanford is they're a very different team away from Reynolds.
Yeah, I agree. They are very good at home, so I'm sure that was part of it. But I was still impressed that they went up that much. Yes, they almost blew it, but to go up 20 points, like I thought that game was going to go down to the wire, which it did, but not in the fashion that it did. And that I thought that, you know, it would probably be back and forth all game. And so I think from that perspective, I was impressed with NC State's ability to get the lead that much in the first half. And then, yeah, Tennessee just couldn't quite finish it off.
What do you make, you know, I guess we'll talk about Tennessee in a second. Last point for me on NC State, you just saw the balance again. Zoe Brooks had 11 points, most of that in that second quarter during the run. She was quiet in the second half. But then you have other times where Sanaya Rivers is the one who's the best player on the floor. And then you have other times where Isaiah James hit a big three in the fourth quarter to kind of quell the NC State tide coming. This is a very, very balanced team. For better or worse, you'll wonder who might get the ball with 5 seconds to go. However, at the same time, you don't, you know, if Sanaya Rivers has a bad game, that doesn't spell the end of NC State like it would. You know, if Rekia Jackson didn't play like she did, Tennessee would have lost by a ton. If Paige Beckers has an off game, UConn probably loses. If insert star player here has a bad game, their team probably loses. That's not the case with NC State.
Yeah, they have enough weapons that they're not relying on one person. It's a very balanced team. So I feel like there's two teams in this region that are like that. We'll talk about the other one in a minute. But
yeah. What do you make of what Tennessee does? This is 2 years in a row. They will have a WNBA first-round pick, Jordan Horston, last year. Rekia Jackson is so good. She is so good. She'll probably go third in the draft. Jewel Spear was brought in as a grad transfer, so she's gone. They have one top 100 recruit coming in. Kaniah Boyd is a top 40 recruit. I'm sure they'll hit the portal. They don't have a whole lot to show for having Jordan Horston and Rekia Jackson in the last 2 years. A Sweet 16 and a second round exit.
Yeah, it just feels like the talent level on these teams the last couple of years has, like, it feels like they've underperformed for the talent that they've had. You know, last year they were preseason, what, top five, which might have been a little bit ambitious, but like they fell very short of that. And then again this year, the talent's there, but they just haven't been able to kind of keep up with
it. Is the talent there? Like, Jackson is obviously there. We saw what they look like without her. Is the talent there?
Yeah, that's fair. It feels like the pieces are there, right? Like, we talked about Jewel Spear. That was a big pickup out of the portal. They've had some other big portal additions. But yeah, I mean, fair. Maybe just the talent's overhyped. I don't know.
I'm not in the business of calling for people's jobs. Do you think, would Tennessee make a change? I don't think they would this year.
Yeah.
But you got to think the pressure's on, right? Like at any other, most other schools, this is a non-issue. Hey, you make the tournament every year. You get to the second weekend occasionally, but this is Tennessee, and like 2008 continues to be a growing long, long time ago.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see them go another direction at some point, just because, yeah, like you said, this is Tennessee, right? Like, they're not in the business of trying to just make it to the second weekend occasionally. They want to be a team that's going to the Final Four, competing for a national championship, and they haven't been able to return to that status, and that's obviously not an easy thing to do. But I think if it feels like they're creeping further away from that, when you talk about like the talent that's going to be there next year right now, which, I mean, obviously that can change a lot in a few weeks with the portal. Like, dude, is it time to make a change? Maybe.
Yeah, this might be a year too early to have that conversation. Tennessee won pretty much every game it was supposed to, and it was 1-9 against teams that are ranked in the top 30 of their hoop stats rating. The one win was against Alabama, who, another team not in the second weekend. So that's NC State, Tennessee. Top half of Portland 4. Texas, kind of like USC. Business-like. Didn't blow out Alabama. Didn't need to. Just, hey, we're better than you. So they led by, what, 3 after a quarter? They're up 7 at halftime. They're up 10 after the third quarter. Just 40 minutes. It never seemed like they had to take it out of second, third gear.
Yeah, exactly. It never really felt questionable. It just kind of felt like they were going to win. And yeah, I don't honestly just don't have much to say about the game. Like,
they just let Madison Booker and Aaliyah Moore like attack the rim. They did their thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On to the second weekend.
Onwards and upwards. And then Utah Gonzaga. We can talk about the Utah stuff if you want. I don't think, of course, it's a story, and you don't want what happened to Utah, and apparently UC Irvine to happen. Racism's bad. Like, obviously, there's no hot take topic here. Like, don't. This is maybe a conversation of, apparently there's some big volleyball tournament going in. And we could talk about teams hosting, and because that was a topic of conversation for a different reason, hosting the first two rounds. But I know, like, baseball tournament, NCAA, if you don't have the requisite hotel rooms for whatever reason, they won't let you host. Happened to Indiana State a couple of years ago. Like, Gonzaga, good on you for earning the right to host. Not really your fault that your town is hosting big events. If you have to go outside the state, and I know Gonzaga's right on the state line, but if you have to go outside the state, like, there's just got to be something where you don't have the requisite hotel rooms or accommodations. Sorry, we got to make you a 5 seed and Utah becomes the 4.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think also, from what I've read this week, I didn't know about anything about that region of Iowa or of Idaho.
I didn't either.
But it sounds like if they needed to put people somewhere other than Spokane, that was probably not the best place to be sending.
No, now, admittedly, knowing the area outside of Spokane, I don't think there's anything until you hit Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Yeah.
Because this came up entirely different scenario with Adia Barnes complaining that Arizona had to stay allegedly an hour away from UConn.
Stayed in Hartford, which is not an hour
away. That's half an hour away.
Yeah.
and UConn's hosted NCAA tournament games for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time it's a complaint. Storrs, Connecticut's in the middle of nowhere. Everyone knows that. So you have to stay in Hartford. You can stay in Manchester. You can stay in Vernon. You can stay half an hour of campus. This is a different scenario of, one, you're crossing state lines. So the protection that you're given by Washington, I think it's some branch of Washington police, they can't do anything. You're in Idaho. You cross the state line. So it's a learning moment for the NCAA, who needs a lot of learning moments for a lot of different things.
Yes.
Thankfully for Utah, I say thankfully, I don't condone what they went through, obviously. Mm-hmm. It was verbal. Nothing, thankfully, physical happened. They're all safe and sound back at home, and they're able to win a game and then lose a game as we get back to basketball to a Gonzaga team that just had a big second quarter. They hit a bunch of threes, and Utah season as a whole was just kind of a weird one. They were a preseason top 5 team, never quite lived up to it. Alyssa Peely was great. There was just something missing all year. Maybe it was the Neipkins injury, but. Never quite reached the levels we thought they would.
Yeah, agreed. I think we had talked about like this team. It's just been so inconsistent, and it was like they might, you know, they could make it to the Final Four, they could lose in the first game, and neither would be all that surprising. And they lose in the second. I mean, Gonzaga got hot. They're a good team. They're a balanced team, right? Like they get hot, but it's not one player. It was, I think, four of their five starters were in double figures in that win. So just a balanced team, an experienced team, and they're able to get the win. I think it's just a case where having multiple options kind of trumped having one.
Yeah, because Pealy, kind of like Ohio State, just Cody McMahon was great, didn't get a whole lot of help. Alyssa Pealy was great, just didn't get a whole lot of help. Any other takeaways from Portland 4, like Alabama, Florida State? I didn't watch a whole lot of that game, I'm not going to lie. That was during dinner time and bedtime. Iowa State, the big comeback over Maryland. We talked about that. Terps up 20. Yikes. Yeah. Lost. And ultimately, at the end of the day, we had chalk to this point in Portland 4. Albany 2. Let's move to Albany 2 because we've talked for almost half an hour. Iowa, for the second time in third year in a row, was taken to the wire in the second round. Lost 2 years ago to Creighton at home. Beat Georgia last year at home. And then tie game 2 minutes to go with West Virginia. Ultimately, they're able to pull it out. And I have lots of thoughts on kind of the overarching storylines and talking points that people have tried to force on this game. From a basketball standpoint, I know you didn't watch. Actually, I have a question for you. You tweeted, you're driving home from covering UConn-Syracuse. You're on the phone with your mom getting play-by-play of that game and UCLA-Creighton. One, how on earth do you have cell service driving through that part of Connecticut? Two, take me through it all. Take me through driving home.
So I have Verizon, so I guess it has decent service. And that's part of the Connecticut. I don't know. Especially because I go out like 384 usually when I come home from UConn. So it is really the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I grew up 5 minutes from 384. Yeah, let's watch it.
Fair. But yeah, I saw the UCLA Creighton score as I'm leaving the arena, as it's also the Iowa West Virginia score. I knew they were both close, and I knew my mom was like watching at least one of them. So I called her and sat on the phone with her. It takes me about an hour to get home from the stores, so sat on the phone with her for an hour and had her tell me everything that was happening in both games, so that I wouldn't miss it. Especially because obviously I was a little stressed about that UCLA Creighton score at halftime.
Yes, your beloved Bruins. We're able to pull it out. You know, we can talk about that first because I think Iowa will lead us into assorted extra top talking points. I put UCLA in the national championship game, having them lose to South Carolina. You haven't won the whole thing, right?
Yep.
I have no numbers to back this up. Just, I think it's more of the eye test. I feel like there's something missing here with UCLA, and I don't know what it is, but I feel like they're missing something.
Yeah, the Creighton games felt weird. Like I said, I only watched part. I get to get home for like the last quarter of that, so I was able to watch the last quarter. But yeah, I kind of agree. Like the first game, they didn't have Lauren Betts, so okay, like whatever. I don't take much from their first game performance, but it did feel like something was missing in that Creighton game. Like I didn't really think that Creighton was going to give them a fight. We've seen Creighton play UConn a couple times this season, And granted, like UConn kind of has Creighton's number, I think, because they've played that basically exact same team the same time, like what, 7, 8 times probably in the last few years. But like UConn just blown that team out by like 30, 40 points. And they did hit shots in the first half, which like so much of Creighton's success is like, do you hit threes or not? But yeah, I don't know. It just, like, it felt like a lackluster performance from UCLA, and I can't put my finger on what it was.
And it's not even the performance so much as, like, it's kind of been like this since Betts left with that mysterious illness. And she's been back now for about a month. I just feel like they haven't clicked for whatever reason. Whether, you know, she missed a game, maybe Betts isn't 100% healthy. Clearly she isn't if she has to miss it's a 2:15 game, but if she has to miss time with a foot injury, I'm going to assume her foot's not 100%. Like they have all the pieces. They have a senior leader, Charisma Osborne, who's been there, done that. They have a couple All-American worthy players, Betts, Osborne, Kiki Rice. Like they've spent the entire year without Emily Bissoir, so you know they know how to play without her, and they've looked great without her. Just, maybe it's just a valley in a season at a bad time where, you know, USC, we've talked about their peaks and valleys. They're peaking at the right time. Maybe UCLA just has a dip in form that they're getting away with. They got to find it quickly.
Yeah. Because
they got a big game on Thursday or Friday. Friday. I don't know the schedule. It's
Saturday.
Not Thursday.
Saturday. South Carolina is Friday. So Saturday.
Saturday against LSU. Okay. Iowa. Were you able to see the end of the game?
No.
Live.
I just got the play. My mother's play-by-play.
Great effort by West Virginia. Nearly had like an all-time viral clip of Mark Kellogg sending Caitlin Clark packing. That would play for the rest of history in Morgantown, West Virginia. End of the day, they didn't do it. Did you see any clips of the fouls that have, honestly, any non-Iowa fan, it seems, up in arms?
I did not.
Okay.
Same time, Caitlin Clark gets a lot of calls, and you have to be prepared for that.
Yes. A lot of ways to go with this. One, women's basketball officiating. Honestly, at this point, it seems we complain about refs in every sport. Slow-mo replay. Officiating's not great in women's college basketball. Go back to the national championship game last year.
Yeah.
The pinnacle of the sport. And go back and tell me that women's basketball officiating's good. Caitlin Clark is going to get that call. Anywhere where the game is played in the history of the world, except for maybe the West Virginia Coliseum.
Yeah.
She's going to get calls. Sorry. Like, if you don't know that going in, sorry. And frankly, I thought the and one on off alter that ultimately decided, I think that was the difference. Soft call. Sure. Contact that that off alter initiated, that every basketball player does, kind of lean in a little bit, draw contact, make a layup. It's a foul. You see it three times a game. Doesn't matter the level. They called it. JJ Quinterly fouls out. She was all over a defender or the person she was defending. It's going to get called sometimes. Harrison is hounding Caitlin Clark 60 feet from the basket. Clark, again, goes into her chest. It's going to get called.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Sorry. Get over it. Because at the end of the day, you shot 34%. Like, great effort. The fact that you're tied at Iowa with 2 minutes to go is great. You can't complain about the officiating when you shoot 34% against a team that allows opponents to shoot 40. Just make more shots. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it comes down to, right? Like, someone's got to make more shots, and Iowa made more shots down the stretch. I mean, as they're expected to, they have Caitlin Clark, but, like, that's ultimately what this kind of came down to.
Yeah, like you shot 34 threes and you made 9 of them. Sorry, like you needed to make 11.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing that came out of this was Caitlin Clark and Iowa got the calls because they're at home, which one, that's not the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Of if you're worried that officials can't call accurate games at home at, you know, at specific venues, that's an officiating problem. That's not a venue problem. What are your thoughts on the growing number of people yesterday who said we need to move these first and second round games to neutral sites?
I couldn't disagree more. I think we've seen the environments for all of these first round games, right? They're all being played in sold out arenas. They're in these crazy environments. Quite frankly, they on TV come across much more fun than any of the men's games environments have. And I don't really know why we assume that what the men's game does is like the standard and that it should be moved to neutral sites because that's what the men do. But I don't know, like the home games are fun. The environments are great. It's fun for the students. Like this is college basketball after all. Like it's fun for the students to have it on campus. It's a reward for being one of the best teams for the season. Like I don't think it's necessarily bad that we have less upsets. Like we're gonna have great Sweet 16 games, great Elite Eight games, great Final Four games. Look at the men's Final Four last year. UConn won every game by 20 points, like to win the national championship on the men's side. That's not very exciting. So I like the format. I don't think they should change it. And I also, quite frankly, think, like, if you're sticking these teams thousands of miles away from their home locations, like, you're going to play to half-empty arenas, and why do that?
I agree with everything you just said. The atmosphere, the reward. If you don't want to go to Iowa, win more games.
Right.
I feel like I'm bashing West Virginia. None of the players or coaches, as far as I know, have said anything. Mm-hmm. This is strictly a fan and social media sentiment. So this is not in any way, shape, or form geared towards like West Virginia. The players and coaches were all, hey, gave it a heck of an effort. Didn't go our way. That's how it is. From a fan point of view, win more games. Mm-hmm. Again, West Virginia wanted to win, make more shots. If you want to host, win more games. Is it fair for the small schools? No. No, it's not fair that Middle Tennessee wins 30 games a year and Florida Gulf Coast wins 30 games a year. They're never going to host. College sports is unfair. If you're a power school and you're complaining that you have to go to Iowa or South Carolina or wherever, you got 31 opportunities a year to go host. And if you can't do it, sucks for you. Other part of this, you're right, the attendance isn't there. Like, look at these, frankly, look at these non, like, look at the attendance and the box score will look different because they're sessions. You know, look at the North Carolina Michigan State game, first game on Friday. There's nobody there. What? There's not going to be anyone there if you move it neutrally. A couple of options for, okay, we'll use Iowa as an example. They'll get a geographic advantage. So, say that game was played in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, or Omaha, Nebraska. Is it going to be any different? It's going to be 90% Iowa fans.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a true neutral, no one's going to go because we have proof that no one goes. Do you know? So the last time top 16 hosts didn't host was what, 2015? If you remember, like they would just hand out bids nilly willy like beforehand. And if you were a six seed LSU and Baton Rouge was set to host, six seed LSU is getting a home game. 12 seed Gonzaga got a home game in Spokane in 2015. You want to go back to that? No. Or if you want to make a true neutral, Kentucky, there was a regional in 2014, UCLA hosted. They didn't make the tournament. So they hosted Nebraska, NC State, Fresno, and BYU. How many people were in attendance for the round of 32 game? UCLA hosting, again, I think it was NC State and BYU. How many people were at that game?
1,000.
Like, 973 people were there. You can't do neutral sites.
No.
For all the growth of the women's game, you can't do neutral sites yet. It's not good enough. Frankly, I don't like that they have two regionals. It needs to be that way for attendance purposes. People can't do four regions. Part of that's probably the TV windows. They're not going to move the TV windows, so you got to adjust. You know, 2019, you had an Elite Eight game with less than 5,000 people there. Greensboro, where South Carolina's right down the road, they had like 6,500 people there. Sorry, you need more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that had 10,000, everyone bitched about because it was in Bridgeport and UConn was a two seed and they put him there. You can't have everything.
Right.
You can't have it all. I know that was a long diatribe, but at the end of the day, for all the growth and all the TV ratings and all of the explosion of the women's game, people need to go and put butts in seats. And for now, the best way to do that is have the teams host. All right, my diatribe's over, Megan. Where do you want to go?
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Let's see. Is that that covers Albany too, right? That's everything in Albany. Oh, we didn't talk about Colorado. We didn't talk about Colorado.
Oh, we also didn't talk about LSU.
Oh, yeah. Also that. I don't know.
Colorado K-State. I thought the Manhattan Regional going in would be, you know, kind of, you know, of all the anticipation, that one was towards the bottom. Kind of came out that way. Again, if this was January, this would be a very different story.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, even that game that Colorado won, it looked like two teams that hadn't come in playing their best.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, well, get on the Buffs. First time they beat an NCAA tournament caliber opponent since January 21st. So good on them.
Yeah, there's like a 6-minute stretch where no one scored in that game. It was ugly.
Yeah. K-State, great year for K-State.
Mm-hmm.
I thought going into the year, you know, they might be a fun team with Ioka Lee back. I certainly never thought they'd race to, for a brief period of time, number two in the country. They got to host. Sure, they lost, but still, certainly building blocks for that program. And then Colorado, even. I know they've had a down month and a half, a bad 6 weeks, that they're in a Sweet 16 for the second straight year. That's a good building block for that program as they make the move back to the Big 12 next year, which, oh, yeah, we're going to see that next year, maybe twice.
Oh, yeah. True. I like to keep track of where all these teams are going. It's going to be an adjustment for me next year.
Yeah, just like the portal. We'll talk about that later. Yeah. And then LSU, Middle Tennessee. Tigers down 9 early in the third quarter. Looked like they were in trouble. Again, if you want to say the ref stole the game, I don't really want to hear about it. Yes, there was a heavy foul discrepancy. You got outscored by 36 points after being up 9. Flauge Johnson. Flauge Johnson starting to play well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this LSU team looked good in the second half. The refs don't have much of a say in a 25 for whatever it was point win. Like, if you want to talk about it with Iowa, West Virginia, where it was close, sure, but like, the refs didn't decide this game. But yeah, LSU, they got it together in that second half. Flauge Johnson looked good. They're going to need to get it together for more than a quarter and a half against UCLA.
Yeah, it's kind of wild to me. Angel Reese, like, if you saw her, you don't think she played well, and then you look up and she had 20 and 11 against Middle Tennessee, and she had 10 points and 19 rebounds against Rice in a game where they played with their food for 28 minutes, and then was like, oh.
We need to win this game.
We should probably win. And then it wasn't really dramatic at the end. Oh, boy. We're a podcast. I'm, like, rubbing my eyes. There's nothing to talk about until the story comes out. You know me, I don't like this outside noise. Yeah. Can't pretend this LSU thing isn't coming, though. And based on Kim Mulkey's preemptive words, do you have any takeaways of, like, her reaction to what we don't know is coming? Like, no one knows what it's about. And the fact that it even got leaked that there's a story coming out is kind of wild when you think about it, because it came from, I don't know where Pat Forty works these days. I think he works at ESPN. Mm-hmm. But, like, he just randomly was like, yeah, there's a monster story coming out on Kim Mulkey from the Washington Post. Oh. Okay. And clearly there's something to it, because Kim Mulkey, who doesn't really say a whole lot, like, she came out,
4 minute statement.
Like, sleeves up, ready to brawl.
Yeah. In a way, like, I feel like her making that kind of statement just, like, turned this into more of a circus than it needs to be until the article comes out. Like, it was just a tweet that was getting some attention that everyone would have forgot about in 2 days when there was no article, probably, until there was an article, and now it's, like, this whole thing. Like, I don't know, I guess they must have something interesting that she's coming out with this 4 minute statement written that she's reading off of. Like, we've never seen Kim Mulkey do something like that, but like, I don't know what we say until we see what they actually have.
I have a wild hunch. If you love Kim Mulkey, like, you seem to love Kim Mulkey, or you despise her. There's very little in between of, like, yeah, she's okay. If you love her, this story, you'll just follow along with her statement. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. And if you hate Kim Mulkey, you're ready with shovels ready, 5.5 feet under, ready to bury her. And again, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. Just wait till the story comes out. And no one's opinion on Kim Mulkey, I don't think, will change from this. Just based on watching the world in the last decade of following just the world in general and women's college basketball, where Kim Mulkey is either your favorite person or she's the biggest villain who ever walked the face of the earth. And again, we're not allowed to have an in-between.
Yeah.
I hope it waits till after the Final Four, because I don't want to talk about it, but I have a feeling it's going to come. You know when it's going to come? It's like 9:18 on Wednesday morning that we're recording this. It's going to come at like noon after we
go. Yeah, probably.
Albany 2, done, in the books. Albany 1, South Carolina. They're good at basketball.
Yeah.
That's my takeaway. They're good at basketball. They should keep playing. They're good.
I mean, like, I don't even know what we say about them, because it's like, I feel like we should be talking about South Carolina, right? They're so good, but it's also like, I mean, they won their two games by an average of like 45 points or something. Like, there's just really not much to say. They obviously expected to handle that first round game without any problems, but they just dismantled UNC too.
A lot of people, we kind of referenced it. I never thought it would be a game, but it's like, in November or December, North Carolina led them at the half. It was close at the end of three quarters. Could they do it again? No. from the opening tip. No, they could not. And it's getting to the point now where, you know, Iowa's close, so everyone wants to talk about Iowa, and everyone wants to talk about Caitlin Clark, and that's not bad. And LSU almost lost, and we want to talk about neutral sites and officials and whatever else you want to talk about. No one's talking about South Carolina and the fact that they are 35-0 now or whatever they are, 34-0. And is it boring to talk about? Maybe, if you just want to talk about the X's and O's. But if you watch them just, I don't even have the word for it, embarrass,
yeah,
take the school, destroy a good North Carolina team. Like, if they play like 85% of that the rest of the way, no one's coming within 15 points of them, maybe 20. If they play 85% as well as they played on Sunday.
Yeah.
It is remarkable.
Agreed. I think we saw the South Carolina team not play at that level in the SEC tournament, and they showed some vulnerability, but these first two games, they've just been kind of at this level where, yeah, I agree. If they keep playing like that, which is obviously an if, but if they keep playing like that, they're winning the tournament.
Like, we can end it now if that's how they're going to play.
Yeah.
If they make 9 threes in a game, no one's beating them.
Right.
Yeah. So I guess that's our South Carolina takeaway. they're very, very, very good at basketball. Other part of that, you know, part of that little pod, Florida Gulf Coast. Led the whole way. Broke my heart. Yeah, they led most of the way. Oklahoma, that was a wild fourth quarter. Did you see that fourth quarter? They were just throwing punches back and forth.
I watched some of it, but was also in stores during it, so got only a little bit of it.
Did the Wi-Fi in stores not work?
Yeah, it never works.
Florida Gulf Coast had a great – they had ran a great play with 0.7 to go, where they just, like, ran in circles and circles and circles and, like, dizzying and – someone had an open three to tie, and it rimmed out. And it was a phenomenal basketball game, one of my favorites of the weekend. But Oklahoma wins, and then another one of the best games of the weekend, Oklahoma and Indiana, had 20 lead changes. I know you were in stores. They just went back and forth all night. And then at the end of the day, best player on the floor, Mackenzie Holmes, played like an All-American in Indiana. I guess a little, not revenge, but does not repeat last year, and they're off to the Sweet 16.
Yeah, good for them. I think after that disappointing exit last year, to get to the Sweet 16 is a good step for this program. And like you said, Mackenzie Holmes, this ultimately is the difference maker there, with the reward of you get to play South Carolina.
Congratulations. I'll save it for when we talk South Carolina and Indiana here in just a few minutes. Indiana's off to the Sweet 16. Good for them. Shout out Fairfield, who for one half, gave Indiana a game, and then second half did not go their way. But the Stags, like, if you go 31-2, that's worth celebrating. So we can give shout out to the Stags, who made me turn the game on. That's my goal with these 1-3 seeds, is in the first round, I don't really want to turn on the game. There's too much other basketball to watch. So, like, LSU made me turn the game on against Rice. Don't do that. Fairfield made me turn the game on for a bit. Mm-hmm. Good for them.
And good for them. They kept their coaching staff. They're not off to somewhere else. I think they signed a 3-year extension. So.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Good for them. Yeah, that's a good point. That, you know, if you have a 30-win year at a low major level, doesn't matter if you didn't do it the year before or if you're going to lose all your pieces for next year generally. Yeah, that's a good point. They'd be gone. Bottom half of the bracket, Notre Dame, kind of like Texas, kind of like USC, no issues, never in doubt. Yeah. They're onto the Sweet 16, and boy, they're peaking at the right time, because I think, honestly, anyone in the field left, if you're ranking teams that could beat South Carolina, like, given the way they're playing, I'm interested in Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think it would be a fun Elite Eight if we get it. I mean, they have to get through Oregon State first, but it could be a fun matchup in the Elite Eight. Obviously, we saw it to start the season. It'd be a fun way to see one of these teams end their season.
Yeah, that was a 29-point game?
Yeah, it wasn't close.
Yeah, very different, though. You know, that was a long time ago. That's a good point. I forgot about that. But very different Notre Dame team and how they're playing. Sony Citron starting to play well. Maddie Westbelt, like, I'm starting to stand Maddie Westbelt every time we talk about her. She made like 3 threes and had 15 points, and that's all she needs to do. Keep it up. Ole Miss, the foundation's there. They have a very good program. They won 24 games. They finished third in the SEC. They just need to find some offense now. Yeah. That's it. They're tough. They play good defense. They rebound. Now they just need a score to honestly, like, they're not going to compete with South Carolina and LSU trying to just bang bodies and win 58-55. They just need to go out and get someone who can drop 20 on any night against anybody. What's the last? Oregon State, Corvallis. We save the best for last. Do you notice what t-shirt I'm wearing?
Yes, I didn't notice it. I was waiting until we got to this region to mention it. You finally got some Nebraska swag.
Yes. Shameless begging works, people. Just pestering for weeks and a couple of months, and it pays off because I got a t-shirt. Shout out to the Huskers. Logan Nisley. It's a Husker thing. She was big in the first round game. 16 points, had a couple of big free throws as A&M made a big comeback down. 16 or 17, they tied it. My girl, Logan Nisley. Difference maker. That's great. Huskers had a very, very good season. They just picked a bad time. They had their second worst shooting game of the year against Oregon State. I know we had the running joke all year. I had to pick against them, but you know, they missed the tournament last year. They got their highest seed. They won their first tournament game in a decade. One of the most fun things to come out of this year for me, like this small basketball little community that we're like an infinitesimal piece of. I made a 3-second throwaway comment that Iowa will beat Nebraska, and it turned into like a fun thing for the rest of the year. And by golly, I'll never say no to a shirt. So shout out to Nebraska, Coach Jessica Keller, friend of the program. Invited on anytime. Shout out. If you want to be, I'm open. Again, I have no shame. My DMs are open, I think. You want me to shout you out? You want me to be a hater? Whatever the cost. I just want a t-shirt. DMs are open, folks, at @r_joyce34. But Oregon State, though, a team that we were high on them a couple weeks ago, probably a month ago, lower on them the last few weeks. I keep going back to just business-like. Mm-hmm. They never really were in doubt in either of the two games. And I'm interested in what they look like against Notre Dame. Because I'm not sure they can score enough. It's a very contrasting style in this game.
Yeah, it's an interesting matchup. Like, stylistically, it's very different. You've got kind of like, and then with like where the score is going to come from, you've got Hidalgo for Notre Dame, just like super quick guard. And then Oregon State, you've got Reagan Beers in the post. Like, very different teams. So, it should be a fun matchup. But like you said, Notre Dame's playing really well right now. So I don't know. It's hard to pick against the Irish at the moment.
So that is our first two-round recap. We're already running up on an hour here, so we will fly through some of these Sweet 16 and potential Elite Eight games. But first, podcast brought to you by the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. Don't miss your chance to be part of Women's Basketball History April 27th. So a month from today, if you're listening on Wednesday when we drop it, Women's Basketball Hall of Fame hosting its 25th anniversary induction, honoring Simone Augustus. She made a couple Final Fours. Rita Gayle Easterling, Taj Williams Franklin, Maya Moore Irons. She won a couple natties. Sue Phillips, Viatt Palmer, Rooney Scovel for their achievements in women's basketball. Ceremony at the Tennessee Theater, Saturday, April 27th. Sponsorship packages, individual tickets still available. For more info, visit WBHOF.com. That's WBHOF.com or call 865-633-9000. All right, Megan. We'll go counterclockwise here. We will start top left corner of your bracket. South Carolina, Indiana, Albany 1. I need to pull up the schedule because I don't know what any of these games are. It's either Friday or Saturday.
No, it's Friday. I don't know what time on Friday, but it's Friday.
Okay. Hoosiers, they got a shot?
I don't see it. I don't think this Indiana team has enough. Mackenzie Holmes is really good, but she's going to have to match up with Camilla Cardoso, and I just don't see it for Indiana.
Holmes probably has to make, like, 2 15-footers in the first quarter, I think, to have any shot, which sounds kind of weird, like it's oddly specific, but South Carolina takes away what you do best. And if what you do best is bang down inside and you don't necessarily have the size of Tennessee or LSU or some of these teams who've given them trouble, like, it's not going to work. Mackenzie Holmes isn't going to score 40 points with the great footwork she has over Camilla Cardoso. Like, it's unrealistic to expect that to happen. Sarah Scalia, Yarden, Garzone, they got to make threes. And then, honestly, like, part of your game plan, hope South Carolina doesn't play like they did Sunday.
Yeah. They need South Carolina to help them out if they're going to have a shot.
Yeah. 5 o'clock Friday in Albany, followed by, so I guess that would make it the...
It's...
Oh, that's game two.
That's game two, yeah.
Okay, well, that is tentative 5 o'clock, depending on how long game one takes. Notre Dame, Oregon State, clash of styles. Beavers nearly 300th in the country in possessions per game. Notre Dame is 40th, so one team is slow. One team pushes the pace. Oregon State, I think whoever controls the pace is going to win, because if it's kind of and the opposite of what I've said about Notre Dame most of the year. If you're going to try to outscore Notre Dame, and if you're Oregon State, I don't think that's got to work. You have to control and play your game. Don't if they play Notre Dame's game, they're not going to win.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. Whoever kind of gets to play their game is who's going to win. We'll see how that works out. I mean, like, these are two really good teams. Could go either way. Feel like maybe favors Notre Dame a little bit, but I think we'll see.
I'm not necessarily rooting for Notre Dame per se. I don't think Oregon State can beat South Carolina. I don't honestly. I probably don't think Notre Dame can either.
Right.
But they're playing so well. If they play like they have been the last 3 weeks on Friday, I really want to see what they would look like on Sunday in a second shot at the Gamecocks. They probably wouldn't win. I think they'd give them more of a game than many would think, given the first scoreline from 3.5 months ago, 4.5 months ago, whatever it was. That's the one, if it were to happen, that's the Elite Eight game I'd most want to see. And watch me say that, and South Carolina's going to win these two games by 55. Come on. we'll stay in Albany. Iowa and Colorado, rematch of last year's Sweet 16. Iowa won by 10. Pretty much Colorado... same team from last year. Monica Sinano, McKenna Warnock had a big game for Iowa last year, and obviously Clark had a big game. But Hannah Stolke only played 2 minutes, so a little different Iowa team than last year. I don't see a different outcome, though.
I don't know. This one could get interesting. I think, again, kind of clash styles. Like, Colorado's defense is a little bit, you know, more intense than what Iowa typically plays against in the Big Ten. I think this Colorado team is better than it was last year when that game was close.
Can't go 4-16 from three like they did against K-State.
Yeah, yeah. You've gotten to hit shots. Like, that's going to be important. I think this one could get interesting. I wouldn't necessarily pick it as an upset, but I think it could get interesting.
Need to control the pace. If the game's played in the 80s, that's a problem for Colorado, who's not, like, they scored 86 against Drake. They scored 81 in a loss to USC. They did it against some non-tournament teams, but generally, they don't go above the low 70s. If it gets higher than that, that's asking for a lot, too. And that combo of Sherrod, Foreman, and Vonleh have to get probably 50 between them, and they average 40, I think-ish, between them. Like, they just, all three, I think, need to play well to have an opportunity. The matchup that everyone's looking forward to, at least in the Sweet 16, UCLA and LSU, two teams that, honestly... they confound me. Like, we talked about UCLA. I feel like they're missing something. LSU, we've been saying that all year, is that they're just missing something. Mm-hmm. Here's someone will keep, yeah, someone's season will come to an end. We'll be going, what wasn't there?
Right. Yeah, this one is, I think, obviously the kind of the highlight of the Sweet 16. It's what everyone probably thought could easily be a Final Four national championship game in the preseason. And it's going to, I think, have that kind of feel to it. It's going to be a big game, and it should be a fun one.
Favoring LSU, I assume Lauren Betts is healthy because she played. She's probably not 100%. That, you got to think that favors LSU with that combo of Reese and Morrow. Favoring UCLA, if they hold court on the glass, these are two of the top three rebounding teams in the country. Mm-hmm. They don't have to, you know, out-rebound LSU. As long as they don't get massively out-rebounded, their guard play is better than LSU's is. Flauje Johnson has that potential to equalize it, but taking the whole season put together, I'll take LSU's backcourt over, or excuse me, I'll take UCLA's backcourt over LSU. Not by a ton, but I'd still take it.
I think UCLA has the advantage in the depth, too. I think they just play a little deeper. They get a little bit more contribution from their bench as well.
Yeah, I mean, LSU will play the starting five and last year POA. Mm-hmm. And then if they need to, they'll go to the freshman Del Rosario, but like Janae Kent, who started the SEC championship game, she'll get, like, they're just not going to play. They're going to go six, maybe seven deep. But that starting five is going to play most of the time. Who do you favor? Like who would, I know you take LA, I know you took UCLA to win it all. Would you stick with UCLA right now?
I think so. I think these are both teams that like didn't overly impress in the first weekend. I think I'm sticking with UCLA. I don't think I'm going to switch to LSU on this one. I think I'm sticking with UCLA. I think they're like the depth. They're just, they have all the pieces. Like you said, the backcourt, I think in particular favor, they're more experienced backcourt too, right? Like, yes, Kiki Rice is also a sophomore like Claudia Ronson, but she's been spectacular. And then you just, you have that veteran presence in Charisma Osborne. And yes, LSU has that in Haley Van Lith too, but Van Lith has just really never seemed to click in this system. So
you know what ESPN is begging for? A game that would destroy records. You know what they want.
They want
this. Is not a conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
This is not a conspiracy theory, but you know what ESPN wants is Iowa LSU.
Yeah.
The ratings that would get would be mind-blowing for an Elite Eight game. I mean, Iowa got 5 million viewers for a second round game. That's more than, I saw this, I don't remember, so I apologize to whoever tweeted it out, mm-hmm. more than any national championship game until last year. And that was a second round game. So that would be, it'd be mind-blowing, the numbers that that would get. Iowa-UCLA would be a good game. Again, mm-hmm. if Lauren Betts isn't at her best, that gives Iowa a major advantage. If Betts is playing like the All-American she is, I know they're the two seed, I would take UCLA. If, because Betts would be the biggest difference maker.
Yeah, and you've got guards that are going to rebound and defend too. I think that's, even if you can't fully slow down Caitlin, like, it's not going to be easy for your Gabby Marshalls and your Kate Martins to get the looks they want.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it'd be a blowout by any stretch. I think I was going to get theirs.
Yes.
What happened on Monday is very much an outlier.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping them to, what did they finish with?
60?
They hit 70?
I don't even know if they hit 70.
They hit 64 points. That is extremely an outlier. Mm-hmm. Holding Iowa below 70 is a major accomplishment. So, I mean, winning 78-75, like, that's, you take it. So that's Albany 2. Portland 3, USC-Baylor. Honestly, for ranking these Sweet 16 games, South Carolina-Indiana is probably the least compelling, but I'd put USC-Baylor second. Baylor, good job making the Sweet 16. USC's playing at the right time. They have the best player on the floor, and the way Mackenzie Forbes is playing, they might have the second best player on the floor.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have that much to say about it. It feels like USC has a very good chance of advancing.
Now, Jada Walker and or Sarah Andrews probably has to outplay Mackenzie Forbes. Asia Blackwell or Bella Fontelroy or both has to outplay Rhea Marshall. If both happen and Juju shoots 9 of 32, you got a shot. I personally don't see it happen because, again, there's nothing that USC has shown me last month that says Forbes and Marshall and Juju and everyone else, like, they're all going to have an off night on the same day. Mm-hmm. And they've become physical. Like, they out-rebounded Stanford by 20 in the Pac-12 title game. You don't out-rebound Stanford by 20.
Yeah.
In any game. And this isn't some monster rebounding team all year. Like, they're just finding it at the right time. Bottom half, this is the dream draw for UConn, I think.
Yeah.
Not having to play Ohio State. They get a Duke team that, like, UConn's bugaboo. I know their defensive rating is good. I don't think this defense is good at all for UConn compared to other high-end elite teams. So they're playing a Duke team that they had a nice game against Ohio State, great comeback. Can they do it consecutively against high-end opponents? That's the question. And they could.
Good. But yeah, it feels like this is a game where, like, an Ohio State game, I think, maybe Paige Bueckers isn't enough. This feels like a game where Paige Bueckers can be enough for UConn to get it done. So yeah, I agree. I think this is a good draw for them. Duke just doesn't score a ton of points. Like, I think UConn just on the firepower that they have between Bueckers and Edwards and Shade, like we've seen, is probably enough to get this.
Duke is the lowest scoring team remaining in the field on average. I think they need to hit 70, or if they don't hit 70, hope Bueckers has an off night. Guards, though, have given UConn fits this year. Richardson isn't at the level of Hannah Hidalgo, mm-hmm. Ori Harmon, obviously, but if she gets Nika Mule in foul trouble, like, we saw what UConn looked like without Nika Mule on the floor. If they can get her into foul trouble, and you're forcing either Ice Brady, who looked bad against Syracuse, or Caden Samuels, who I don't think played against Syracuse.
Yeah.
They're so thin that if any one of the Huskies, frankly, gets in foul trouble, that could be a problem. That would leave Portland 4. Texas Gonzaga. I'm fascinated by this matchup.
Yeah. This is like, again, very different styles, defense versus offense. Two pretty balanced teams. This should be a lot of fun.
Gonzaga out-rebounded. I'm going to go back to that Stanford win as kind of a blueprint. Out-rebounded Stanford. They won the turnover battle. What does Texas do best? Well, they rebound the heck out of the ball, and they force 20 turnovers a game. If Gonzaga can, again, don't need to out-rebound Texas. Just don't get out-rebounded by 20 and take care of the basketball. They have a chance. You know, they're not huge, but neither really is Texas. Like, they're both tough physical teams, but it's not in the 6'7 Camilla Cardoso type tough. Yvonne Ejim, if you don't know her, there's a good story that I saw you retweeted yesterday about her. She's Gonzaga's leading scorer. Eliza Hollingsworth is another big, and then you have the Trung sisters out in the perimeter. If you don't know a whole lot about Gonzaga, like, they're balanced. They can shoot the three. They can bang it inside. You put them in the Final Four, so, I mean, clearly you think they have a chance.
Yeah, I think they do. I think one thing, I was looking at the numbers last night, like, Texas is, I think, three of their losses this season. The team has hit over 9 threes. I think they're, I want to say, 1-3 in games where teams have hit 9 or more threes against them. Gonzaga averages over 9 threes a game. Like, they make threes, and they made 13 against Utah. I think if they have a good shooting night, they can upset them.
Yeah, that's kind of a great equalizer with a team like Texas, who doesn't make a ton of threes. Like, LSU doesn't make a ton of threes. Mm-hmm. South Carolina historically doesn't make a ton of threes. If you can go out and hit 10, that can make up for what you lack in the front court. Gonzaga certainly has that opportunity. If Texas, however, on the flip side of that, if Texas goes out and hits 7, 8 threes, that's probably too much for the Zags. And that leaves another very interesting matchup, NC State-Stanford. On paper, I have no reason to pick the Wolfpack.
Yeah.
Stanford, though, like, they just...
They need Cameron Brake to stay on the floor. I think if Cameron Brake can play close to 40 minutes, like, this isn't a problem for Stanford. Like, her and Ariafin are probably enough. Even if they don't get a ton from their guards, they need to get some from their guards. But the two of them, I think we've kind of seen all season, and in most cases is enough, as long as they can keep Brink in the game. And I feel like, I don't want to, like, dismiss the Iowa State game, but, like, it felt like a Cameron Brink we haven't really seen this year. Like, we haven't seen her be this player that gets into foul trouble like that. Like, she's been much better about it. So I don't know. I don't take too much stock in, like, what happened in the first round or the second round there.
Brink had 8 points and 8 rebounds, and I'm with you. That's not going to happen a second straight game, I don't think. And then NC State, Isaiah James, she's very good at home. 19 points on 42% shooting from deep at home. Away from home, she shoots 21% from three and averages 13 a game. So you need home Isaiah James to travel 3,000 miles west to Portland. Your Final Four is still intact. As a reminder, you correct me if I'm wrong, you had SC, Gonzaga, UCLA, and UConn?
Yep.
Okay, so you're sticking with it.
Yeah, I'm sticking with it. Yeah, it's in the bracket.
South Carolina, Texas, UCLA, and USC. So one of us, knowing us, will probably both manage to somehow be right and wrong at the same time. Are you done until Cleveland? Are you just home watching games this weekend?
I am in Albany all weekend, so I won't be at the UConn games, but I will be in Albany all weekend. So I'm excited. Really good slate of basketball coming in Albany, so should be fun.
You've been to Albany before?
Yeah, I have family that lives in Albany, so very familiar. You
on Saturday?
There's literally nothing to do.
you had that ready to roll. Well, enjoy doing nothing on Saturday. Enjoy the games on Friday. And Megan, we will talk next week for a little Final Four.
Sounds good.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient.
Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.